Good morning. Welcome to your legacy committee. Members, staff, you all have a legacy pin in front of you. Please open it up in the package.
I don't have
one. Oh, you don't have one yet? Okay, members, take it out. Put it in there. Don't pin yourself. Leon, you particularly should have one on. He gave me his 2 weeks ago. So I'll call the meeting officially open, I guess, at this point. I want to welcome all the good friends on the side aisles here. I appreciate your attendance and committee members. So with that, today we have the Parks and Trails, the very famous Parks and Trails, that will present to us some great things that you've done in our state and so your proposal for the next this session. And with that, has anyone read the minutes? If so, we could entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I would move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Well, today we have, as I said, the Parks and Trails. And with that, you know the routine, right? You introduce yourself for the record, and you may start your presentation.
Good morning, Chair McDonald and committee members. I'm Lisa Barajas. I'm the Executive Director of the Community Development Division at the Metropolitan Council. I'm joined by my colleagues.
Good morning, Chair McDonald and members. My name is Laura Preuss. I'm a statewide program and planning manager with the DNR's Division of Parks and Trails. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Good morning. Renee Mattson, Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission.
Good morning. Thank you for attending, and you may start your presentation.
Thank you. We'll take a little bit of take some turns here, but I'll first kick us off with a little bit of an overview. On behalf of the Metropolitan Council and its 10 regional park implementing agencies, we thank you for the opportunity to present this overview of the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund. We, all three of us here and all three of our agencies, are committed to advancing the shared vision of the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, which is to connect everyone to a world-class system of regional and statewide parks and trails in Minnesota. And together, we make up the state and regional park system of Minnesota. I want to begin by sharing a brief history of Minnesota's Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment to the Minnesota Constitution. As many of you know, in 2008, during a challenging economic time, the voters of Minnesota passed the Legacy Amendment, a 3/8 of 1% state sales tax increase dedicated to four funds, as shown on this pie chart. The Parks and Trails Fund is the smallest of the four funds, and it is a critical source of support for Minnesota's parks and trails of regional and state significance. Over 18 months, our partnership conducted an extensive public engagement effort to learn what the citizens of Minnesota's hopes are for this exciting source of support. Together, we developed the following vision and a 25-year long-range plan for Minnesota's parks and trails of state and regional significance. The vision for the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan is to provide a seamless, accessible, and welcoming system of parks and trails for all Minnesotans and for visitors to the state of Minnesota as well. It recognizes that parks and trails provide a variety of physical and mental health benefits for Minnesotans. And there is a concerted effort to reach beyond traditional groups and individuals to ensure a larger and more diverse audience is served by these state and regional parks and trails. Today, all three partners continue to engage with the public around the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund. This includes the 17-member Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, as it continues to provide guidance and champion progress toward the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. Key learnings from our engagement work include people's identities as Minnesotans are tied to having easy access to parks, trails, and natural resources. Indeed, it is a core part of our identity and the thing that many Minnesotans place a lot of pride in. Minnesotans place high value on taking care of existing parks and trails facilities and preserving the natural resources. Many Minnesotans see the health and wellness benefits offered by nearby parks and trails as part of their daily lives. And parks and trails must become more accessible and welcoming to people with different abilities and from all backgrounds. More public awareness of these resources and marketing specific parks and trails by legacy agencies is a necessary part of this work. Older participants are concerned with preserving natural resources for younger generations and introducing them to the system as well, and about teaching them about nature and outdoor activities. joint projects among the three partners, the DNR, MAC Council, and Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, include our work together to coordinate toward a seamless system, the development of a user-friendly website, coordinated research projects, and the new pilot program around Minnesota's Parks Artists in Residence Program, an effort to work with artists to help make our parks more welcoming to new visitors all across the state. Legacy funds have been a game changer for the DNR, for Met Council, and for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. These funds allow partners to accelerate work in critical areas and to fill important gaps. The 25-year legacy plan is organized around four pillars or strategic priorities that are illustrated here on the slide. They are to connect people in the outdoors, to acquire land and create opportunities, and to take care of what we have, as well as to coordinate among partners. So with that, I'll transition into some updates from the Metropolitan Regional Park System, and then my colleagues will each share about their elements as well. So once again, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the Regional Parks and Trails System. As I mentioned earlier, the council works with 10 regional park implementing agency partners who also are very thankful for this opportunity and greatly rely on Legacy as a key source for work for advancing accessibility within the Metropolitan Regional Park System. Here's a map of our Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails System, and the 10 regional parks implementing agencies are illustrated both on the map and on the left-hand side of the slide. The council works closely with these 10 agencies to help support the system through planning, through partnerships, through shared programming. And the partnership is critical to providing that seamless system of nature-based parks and trails, and as is called for in the 25 years Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. The Metropolitan Regional System functions essentially as the state parks and trails of the metro area. Our Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails System is also nationally renowned. It's made up of 44 regional parks, 12 park reserves, 8 special recreation features, and 56 regional trails with almost 500 miles of riding opportunities. In total, the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails System protects over 65,000 acres of parkland, which is all open to the public. The last time we measured visitation at our regional park system was in 2023, when we found that we had more than 69 million visits to the system. This is far more people than visit the Mall of America every year, which is estimated at 40 million visitors. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund helps make the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails System a true gateway to all of Minnesota's amazing outdoor opportunities, including the state park system, which does have elements within the metro area, including some trails and some parks that are working on, or that together we coordinate on connections across our system. For the Metropolitan Regional Park System, legacy funds are distributed by a statutorily defined formula. So 90% of those funds are distributed by this formula directly to the 10 regional park implementing agencies. This formula takes into account the relative sizes of each implementing agency's park, so their total area or acreage, and the number of local people that they serve, and then the number of non-local visitors their parks and trails attract, and how much it costs to run each agency's portion of the system. The remaining 10% provides funding for land acquisition for the regional parks and trails system. For each acquisition, park agencies contribute at least 25% of the acquisition cost. The council contributes 30% of the cost, and legacy funds supply 45% of the cost. The council's Park Acquisition Opportunity Fund is in high demand, and we actually just passed two more acquisitions, or will have them passed this afternoon at our council meeting by our board. The Metropolitan Council coordinates the Metropolitan Parks System legacy project selection process, but it is the locally elected boards and commissions of each of these agencies that actually determine what is in their capital plans and which projects that they will be selecting each year. Council staff review all of those projects for consistency with both the council-approved park and trail long-range plans, as well as ensuring that the proposed projects meet all state guidelines associated with the legacy funds. The photo in this slide shows a legacy-funded trail bridge refurbishment project along the Minnehaha Parkway Regional Trail in Minneapolis. This bridge was failing due to the increasingly frequent freeze and thaw cycles in our Minnesota winters. And this isn't uncommon across both the metro system, but also across the state system, as we do have older portions of our system that are in need of refurbishment. The four pillars in the Regional Parks and Trails Legacy Plan line up nicely with a recently completed 2050 Regional Parks and Trails Policy Plan, which is a part of the Metropolitan Council's 2050 Regional Development Guide. The new 2050 plan prioritizes connecting people in the outdoors, acquiring land and creating opportunities, taking care of our existing systems, and coordinating among our partners, like the Minnesota DNR and the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. These are just a few of our recent Parks and Trails legacy investments in the Metropolitan Parks and Trails system. On the left, Three Rivers Park District renovated restrooms at the Baker Park Reserve at Lake Independence in an effort to create a well-designed and accessible basic amenities. And by accessible, if you think about some of the older parts of our system, sometimes those doors are really heavy. Even little kids can't open them, but certainly not folks who may have mobility issues. And so that can be really limiting and make parks not usable for a lot of our residents across Minnesota. So thinking about how we actually improve our systems to make them accessible to all of our users, and not having a bathroom is one of those key things that people say, maybe I don't want to bring my kids here. The middle picture is there have been several recent legacy-supported land acquisitions, as I mentioned, at Scott County's Blakely Bluffs Park Reserve along the Minnesota River. The county is creating amazing access to this resource that, that someday, in the not-too-distant future, will be open to all Minnesotans to experience this magical natural space. And just down the river in Dakota County is the Minnesota River Regional Trail, as illustrated on the right-hand photo, where the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is doing big things to create safe, accessible, and scenic trail experiences for cyclists and pedestrians. Ultimately, this trail will connect from Dakota County all the way to Henderson, Minnesota, and Greater Minnesota's regional trail system to truly provide a great experience along the Minnesota Trail. The vistas there, the wildlife are truly outstanding. So thank you again for your time today. I'll now pass the presentation to my colleague, Laura, at the Minnesota DNR.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chair, members, again, on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources, it's such a pleasure to be here with our partners and colleagues to continue the presentation. I'd like to begin by sharing a little overview of our system, discussing our process, and then sharing some examples to really bring it to life. On this slide, you see an overview of our Parks and Trails system in the state of Minnesota. The map on the right really illustrates how these locations are all around the state of Minnesota. They cover some of Minnesotans' variety of ecological classification systems and harbor some of the state's finest natural and cultural resources. And so these places are also extremely important as far as tourism centers around the state, and they play an important role in contributing to Minnesota's $13.5 billion outdoor recreation industry. The chart on the left side of the slide gives you a quick overview of the types of facilities that run across the system. You'll notice that the state parks and recreation areas, we have 73 of those, again, all around the states, state providing many camping opportunities, day use, and a whole range of opportunities. Many campgrounds are also located in forest recreation areas, including horse campgrounds and more. It's important to note in these state parks and recreation areas that these cover 240,000 acres of public lands in Minnesota. And those lands provide opportunities for prairie restorations, bison herds, other types of important natural resource management opportunities within the state. In addition to parks and recreation areas, trails are also a fundamental part of the system, playing a role connecting communities and a lot of these important features. Minnesota has 25 state trails throughout the state, many of those developed as paved trails, and some of them natural surface. We also have an extensive grant and aid program working with volunteers and partners. In addition, we manage public water recreation accesses, fishing piers, and Minnesota has a really unique feature in that we have 35 state water trails, which is very unusual. No other states in the nation have such an amount of water trails. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is largely focused on, again, these parks and trails of statewide significance. Many of the water recreation aspects are funded through different funds with the water recreation funds. Next up is to share a brief overview of our process for the legacy funds. Similar to Met Council and Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, we use the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan to guide our priorities. These include these four strategic priorities that were previously mentioned: connecting people to the outdoors, acquiring land and creating opportunities, taking care of what we have. And that's not in a static way, but really in a forward way of looking at how do we ensure our system will meet our future needs with accessibility and modernizing our system. And finally, coordinating with partners. So each biennium, the DNR is reviewing this 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, as well as DNR's strategic priorities to see how these are aligning. We look at the needs and the outcomes to understand how we may need to adapt and look at our next set of priorities for the biennium. We also rely on feedback and insights that we hear from the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, as well as a number of our stakeholder engagement efforts to help guide our priorities. Finally, we use all of that to set up our next biennium's priorities, which really tries to build on and accelerate the great work that legacy impacts allow us to have. Next, I'd like to share a range of examples to really bring to life these strategic priorities, give you a better sense of some of the programs that we're investing in. This slide focuses on the ICANN programs, and you may have heard of these in the past. These are really popular outdoor skill building programs. They cover a range of things such as I can camp, I can mountain bike, I can fish, I can paddle. And these are great ways for people who might not feel so comfortable in the outdoors to get a chance to be with someone who can introduce them to the opportunity, have equipment already there, teach them how, and get them comfortable in the outdoors. These are really low-cost opportunities for people to sign up and get introduced to the outdoors. We've also seen that people who participate on these are not always people who have typically participated in our parks and trails in the past. And so we're reaching a variety of people through these programs, and they're very, very popular. Another area that we do to connect people through the outdoors is through a new Library Pass program. We piloted this and used legacy funds to allow us to take this exciting step. And we're partnering with libraries around the state, often in lower income areas, but throughout the whole state, to provide an opportunity for people to check out a state parks pass. This is a 7 days pass, so someone who might not be sure if they're wanting to get the full permit can come in, check it out, and get out there and give it a try and get introduced to the system. We're continuing to build on that and grow that program given the popularity that we've experienced with it. On the right side of the slide, you see the Junior Ranger program. And this is just one little example that gives an idea of how our interpretive naturalists work to try to make our places inviting places where people can learn about our system, learn about Minnesota, and also introduce kids and families to the outdoors. So we've heard, again, feedback from people saying, how do I get my kids introduced into the outdoors? Get them off the phone, have some new experiences. And what we find is this Junior Ranger program that was newly developed gives kids activities. It's a way for parents to share this with them and feel that they're involved in introducing their kids to the outdoors. Again, we get really positive feedback, and we're trying to do these programs based on the feedback that we hear from people. So that's just one more example of connecting people to the outdoors. Another pillar that you've heard about is acquiring land and creating new opportunities. These are chances to, for example, connect new segments of trail or provide some new development opportunities. One example that you see here is at Itasca State Park. The slide on the left, we heard from our visitors that many of them didn't feel comfortable going as families trying to go through this wilderness drive to make it to the headwaters. A narrow road, people didn't feel safe or comfortable. And so with legacy funds, we were able to create a segment of paved trail that allows people to feel safe, get people to the headwaters of the Mississippi in an accessible and safe way. And so these legacy funds really allow us to have that big impact to ensure that people have that amazing legacy experience at some place like the headwaters of the Mississippi. Another example related to acquiring land and creating opportunities is at Split Rock Lighthouse State Park. Our Shiprock Creek Campground, these are really a bit of a tongue twister, had the opportunity to expand that to meet the needs. This is a premier location on the north shore of Lake Superior. And what we saw is with just limited cart-in or walk-in sites, it was not meeting the camping demand. This allowed us to add 46 electric sites, accessible sites, bathrooms, ways for people to get out up there on the north shore. The other feature that also Lisa Beth talked about was this provides a connection to some of the county's regional mountain biking systems. And so we're trying to see this again as a seamless system of interconnectedness. People don't care who manages it. They just want to get outside and have some fun with it. Lastly, another pillar is related to taking care of what we have. This is an example at Sibley State Park where we are upgrading and modernizing a campground there. Many of these facilities are in dire need of assistance to modernize, upgrade, and make them safe and clean. Many throughout our system, we have the Conservation Corps buildings. A lot of these were built like 90 years ago. And so in this slide, in the middle picture, you'll see on the far left, it's one of these buildings that has now been made possible to maintain and use. People can go in and use that shower building as part of their camping experience. At the same time, we see that we have to shut the water down when it comes winter or on these shoulder seasons, so to speak. So you also see in the picture a number of vault toilets. And this is a way for people to, maybe the shower building is off, but they're able to get into and use the system safely with these vault toilets. So I'm chuckling a little bit that we're focusing a lot on these toilets, but when it comes to what we hear from people about what they need, clearly that's an important part of keeping our system welcoming is having a clean and safe place to go. So I hope that these examples give you a sense of the range of types of investments we make that are consistent with the 25-year legacy plan and those strategic priorities. I'll hand it now to my colleague, Renee Mattson.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate it. Thanks again for being here today. We're the fun group. Who doesn't like to talk about parks and trails and what fun you can have in them? So it's good to be here with you today. Again, Renee Mattson, Executive Director, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, along with our chair, Rick Anderson. Rick is out of Ballaton, which is near Marshall. So Chair Anderson has joined us here today. If there are questions later on, certainly Chair Anderson can address those as well. The commission is newer. So in 2013, we were created by the governor, and the governor appoints our 13 commissioners in our six districts, which you can see on the map. And also, you've got this report, our report in your packet. In the middle section, if you want to take more detailed look at where our facilities are across the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota, it's in there. But just briefly, since 2013, we've gone from a fairly flat kind of charge, which is to designate as regionally significant parks and trails in the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota. Right now, we are up to 80 of those facilities, which are natural resource-based parks, regional trails, special features, or a new category we have, which is a supportive partnership. And those are throughout the state of Minnesota. You'll notice some holes there. We're always seeking new facilities that fit that charge to be regionally significant. So that's an ongoing process. But since 2013, 80 have been designated. And when I say kind of a flat charge, I don't mean that in a negative way. Certainly our 13 commissioners in each and two of these districts, the six districts and one at large, would say that that's just part of our role. So we do have a designation application process. You apply for designation. If you rank high, you are invited to submit a qualified master plan to us. And then at that point, it goes to the commission who discusses it, asks questions oftentimes. Mostly these facilities become designated. It's a fairly comprehensive process because being regionally significant comes with a lot of opportunities, one of which, of course, is access to that limited fund, our 20% of the Greater Minnesota portion of the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund. So those facilities alone have access to apply for funding. And funding actually is one of the lower bars. We don't make our process too difficult. Of course, we want these projects to be thoroughly vetted. We want to make sure that they can be in the public use within the 3 years that grant is available to them. And we vet them very thoroughly. But we don't make it so onerous that smaller communities just can't figure out the process. We have communities of 237 people, like Big Falls in northern Minnesota, who have successfully applied for grants of over $2 million to improve their campground and horse camp, as well as build a community pavilion for not only the residents but also visitors using that campground. So we've got all range of cities, counties, and tribal governments that have different funding streams, and we want to make sure that it's fair for all of those communities, whether you have access to great funds or really are somewhat inhibited by a small community and don't have access. So over time, we've done a lot of changes to make sure that we're always looking at funding and opportunities with an eye towards making it fair for everyone who applies. So you've heard about this already from our partners. We all basically have the same sorts of classifications. We have natural resource-based parks all over the state. Those, of course, are larger facilities. We also have trail systems, which can be paved, natural surface, mountain bike trails. We have special features. You'll notice some differences here. We do have a couple of zoos in Greater Minnesota. Who'd have thought? We have a beautiful shooting range that's been developed in Beltrami County. It's an amazing facility. They do a lot of work with kids there. We have ski hills in different parts of the state, and we have some ice climbing facilities as well and climbing walls. And then finally, we have our new classification, which is a supportive partnership, and that's to support things in communities like the Roseau State Water Trail. Roseau is our first supportive partnership, and what this is intended to do is support communities who are on facilities that will never be able to be part of the Greater Minnesota system because they're either federally or state-owned facilities, but as a way to make them attractive to the communities and boost the efforts and the visitors to those. These kinds of supportive partnerships, the communities can apply for, say, a grant to build a parking area with maybe a bike repair station or a small campground in their community to help support those facilities that bring people to the community that they won't be able to apply for designation for that entire trail because it's owned by someone else. So it's an example of the way that we're nimble to look at the way we're serving our communities, serving our facilities, and making sure that we have a big impact in these areas. And a couple of things I want to talk about. When I alluded to, you know, we were sort of flat. Well, we're not. We're very three-dimensional. As we've gotten out of the very busy work in the beginning of designating these facilities, it was a big ask in the beginning of our five-member evaluation team to look at sometimes as many as 30 or 40 applications and sort through those and rank them eventually high, medium, or low. Now we're taking in about 3 to 4 facilities a year because we've gotten most of the low-hanging fruit, if you will, has applied and has become successful in being designated. So now we're looking more broadly at our partners and at the state of Minnesota residents about how we can serve them better in different ways. And some of those ways are in this report that are in front of you. And I just take you to page 10, where we go into a little bit more about the Minnesota Parks Artists in Residence Program, which is a joint cooperative project across the three systems. So there's a little bit more about that in there. But also on the other page, on page 10, we've got information about our track wheelchair grants and our free equipment use days. A few years ago, one of our commissioners, I should mention, is in a wheelchair. And so Jen Foley, who's our at-large commissioner out of the St. Cloud area, provides us with a lot of information about how we can serve people who are limited in their mobility better and what makes a difference. And one of those things came before us with a demonstration one day about how track wheelchairs work. There's a company out of Marshall, Minnesota, Action Manufacturing, who makes track wheelchairs. And we thought, that's a really important way to get people back out into the outdoors. It may not be that you're permanently in a wheelchair, but I've got a bad hip, and it makes walking some days a little bit more difficult. So that's something I can get fixed. But as you get older, I'm beginning to realize, you just may have mobility issues, and you're limited. So the commissioners talked amongst themselves for a few meetings and decided that a way we could make a meaningful difference is to make track wheelchair specific grants available to our communities. So we worked with Action Manufacturing and we came up with a very attractive rate that they would provide these chairs to us for, and we put out a call for applications and we received 3. And there were a few strings attached, I should say, to this application. It was that you needed to make these chairs available to our other system partners if they wanted to try them out. You needed to make it available to everyone at no charge, and you needed to maintain it. So those weren't real heavy asks. We had enough money in our fund to fund two of those track wheelchairs, and they were pretty well geographically dispersed applications. One was from Duluth, one was from Wright County, which is near the metro area, and one from Lyon County in southwest Minnesota. And how do you pick a winner or loser out of that batch? Well, you don't. We awarded the funds that we had available in our legacy funds account for two of the chairs. And we had money in our operating budget, and we paid for that third chair out of our operating budget. And those chairs now are available for people to use to access the outdoors, to enjoy themselves, and more so important, too, for a facility who may not want to make the investment right away to be able to borrow, to take to their park or trail and let their community use them and see what the interest level is. So that's one thing that we've done that's beyond the scope of what we were started at, but it really is helping communities make a difference. The other thing is some free equipment use days. There was a really good question that came out of a hearing last year or the year before about how do we make equipment available to people when you can't afford to try the sport. We all can recognize that, you know, you might want to do something, but you just don't know if you're going to enjoy it, and getting that equipment is not always easy if you're in a community that doesn't have access to that rental equipment, or you just don't want to pay for something until you can try it out. So we've given equipment grants out in the past, but we do now require, if you are applying for an equipment grant, that you make this equipment if you happen to be charging for it, and I think really only one of our facilities does. And of course, that's a way to ensure that you can continue to have this equipment as it ages out and becomes used. You have to make it available to the public at no charge for a specific number of days per year minimum. And those days just can't fall on a Wednesday at 11 a.m. They have to be on a weekend or a holiday as well. There's some stipulations about that. If you have seasonal equipment, of course, we require that it's available during that season, but if it's year-round, there are more free use days. So we're trying to ensure that we can make things available to people, whether they have the funds to try out a sport or not. Because after all, the whole point is getting people into the outdoors and enjoying it. So that's something that came out of the committee last year. I'd mentioned our at-large member, Jen Foley, Commissioner Foley, who is in a chair. As we've talked about making funds available so that we can make facilities that don't make that mark. You know, some of our facilities are older. All of our systems have older facilities. We've said when we're having funding applications, we expect you to meet, obviously, or exceed ADA requirements. Well, if you don't understand really what the ADA requirements are, it's hard to exceed them. And we've learned over time that architects, engineers, landscape architects, they are not required to know what the ADA requirements are. So it was really important to us to try to make funds available to retrofit facilities to make them easier. Think automatic door openers. We've all come to doors with your hands full. You know, we're lucky we can put things down, open the door, stick our foot in and get in the door. If you're in a chair or you're in a walker, it's harder to do that. So that's something that's easy enough to do but may not be easy for a facility with limited funds. So we're going to make those accessibility grants for whatever improves your facility available. But we've gone further and we've written a value statement for inclusion and accessibility that's on page 12. And you can review that when you want. But we've also hired an expert, Bill Botten, worked with the U.S. Access Board for 22 years. He's recently retired. Unfortunately for us, he's a failure at retirement. He was interested in working with us. And I met him at a seminar last year that took place in Minneapolis, put on by the Great Plains ADA Symposium. And the poor man thought I was stalking him because I went to one of his seminars early on that was about parks and trails and making things more accessible. And then I sat in every seminar he had. And we were able to talk, and the commissioners made the decision that we're going to hire him on a contract basis and make him available to teach us all more about what this means. So we plan to put on a series of four forums during the course of the year. Our first one was just last week, and we talked about playgrounds and maintenance of those playgrounds. The one coming up in April is about parks, shared use paths. and making sure that all of our trail systems are thinking accessibility. The two coming up in the third and fourth quarters we haven't decided on yet. We're going to talk to our partners and see what's going to be of interest to them. But our first seminar that we had over 50 people. We made it available not just to our partners, but any park or trail in the state of Minnesota interested in learning more about it, as well as our partners at DNR and Met Council. It's not something we're holding in-house. We want this information to get out. So those are some of the ways we're trying to be more three-dimensional in our thinking about what we can do after we've designated these facilities, we've helped fund them, and now what are the next steps we can take to ensure that we're making things easier for people to get there, easier to use the equipment, and making things just generally better for all of us when we're in our parks and trails. So with that, that's the end of our formal presentation, and we're available for questions should you have any. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, ladies. Appreciate the overview. And Ms. Appleton Mattson and Chair Anderson and I had a pleasure to meet in Wright County, which is near the metro area. I'm really glad you said it was near the metro area. We pride ourselves on not being from metro. We're a farming community. But we had a pleasure to meet in Delano and visit and share your presentation as a new chair. So much appreciated. With that, if there's any questions, we'll entertain those now. But Chair Anderson, I found you to be quite delightful to speak with and entertaining and informational. Do you have anything to add? You're not obligated, but you were quite insightful. So, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's been my privilege to serve with Legacy since 2009. I was on the original committee that wrote the 25-year plan with my colleague, Emmett Mullen. I was one of the founding members of the PTLAC with my colleague, Laura Price, and I've been on the commission since 2013 and have been chair for the last 5 years. When we wrote the plan and presented to the legislature, I knew this was going to be a good work. I had told Emmett, this has to be a simple plan that everybody can understand, and everybody's taken it to heart, and I appreciate all the support that the legislature has given to all three entities. We probably had some bumpy roads at the beginning, and I can say that now, but I think now we're past that and we all work together. Because as Laura said, nobody cares. They just want a good place to go recreate. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. For the record then, I forgot to mention, just introduce yourself so it comes from your voice, not mine.
Okay. My name is Rick Anderson. I'm chair of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission from small town of Balton, southwest part of the state. And a little background, I was 31 years parks director. I'm in my for Lyon County, and I'm now in my 15th year as county commissioner for the county. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Yes, and thank you for your good work. You've convinced me that the projects that you look through and vet and approve are thoroughly vetted and researched. So thank you. With that, we have a question from one of our members. Before we go to Representative Heinzman, I want to introduce a brand new to this committee, GOP researcher, Chelsea Axelson. Chelsea, if you would just introduce yourself, if you have a mic there. You could speak up loud. And then also share with us your favorite category of legacy. Come on up.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Axelson. Very happy. I also do bonding, so this kind of rolls into this. And I think my favorite thing is going to be parks and trails because I'm a big state park gal and have been to almost half of them. My parents really pushed that when we were little, so happy to learn more.
Wow. Thank you, Chelsea. Chelsea's assistant next to her right, your left, depending on where you're sitting, is her assistant, Troy Heinzman. Troy, you wave to the group. And you should see his boots. He has the best looking cowboy boots this side of the Mississippi. And a good tie, yes. Well, since we went from young Heinzman, let's go to old man Heinzman, Representative Heinzman.
That's pretty good, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for the presentations. I'll start out with the positive. That's always a good idea. There is tons of stuff here that virtually all Minnesotans love. We agree on that almost universally, I think. And there's photos of projects in probably every one of our districts, very strategic, very good to see that. And I certainly appreciate the photos of Cuyuna. All of my six kids, Troy included, are Cuyuna addicts. We all ride together there. It's fantastic. I also have the Paul Bunyan Trail cutting right through our family's farm in the Nisswa area. And so, you know, lots of folks coming through that, and we see lots of activity on the trail. And then so many other projects that you covered today. Some of the improvements are especially good to see, where we have infrastructure that needed to be replaced, repaired, what have you. Some of the facilities that are being built. All great stuff. The question that I have is, of course, the big question, and I'm just putting it on the record because I think that we all, as members, have quite a heavy lift, because the reality is the ongoing costs of maintaining and keeping this infrastructure pristine and in usable condition is significant. And you're going to hear a lot from me in the coming months, maybe years, I hope not, but over future conversations about what are we doing to maintain this infrastructure. Because in a lot of cases, despite our best efforts, we're not. And I can see trails going without crack sealing, and I'm a maintenance guy. It's no different than your car. You start skipping oil changes, and it's going to cost you in the long run. There's a long ongoing conversation when the legacy amendment was passed and the funds were created about supplanting. That's fine. But if we don't figure out a way to maintain this infrastructure, we're heading towards a really significant problem. And I hope that we can be collaborative. Maybe this is the session to do it, maybe not, but it seems like it could be a great opportunity for us to really be smart about this and decide what are we going to do to make sure that we have something maybe like the ENRTF, the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund, or another tool that is dedicated to the ongoing costs, because a bonding bill is not going to cut it. There will never be enough money in all of these bonding projects that are necessary around the state to cover the additional costs of all these great new things we're building. The maintenance costs are just absolutely skyrocketing. And if we don't do something about it, folks are going to be looking back and saying, and I'll quote the new board chair, they don't care. They just want it fixed, or they want it working, or they want it open, right? So that's my diatribe, and I'll just ask that if anybody wants to address that who presented today, that's fine, but that's my soapbox, and you're going to hear a lot more from me on that in the future. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time to get that out.
Absolutely, Representative Heisman, thank you for the question. Very important question. So with that, which one of you would like to address that? And again, I think for the record, right? Keep your name again for the record. No, you don't need that. We'll just, we know who it is. The listening audience.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, again, Laura Preuss, thank you for the question. And mostly we're hearing and listening. So thank you for those comments that we can all be considering. And I really appreciate your highlighting the importance of maintaining the system. As Renee mentioned, all of us have facilities and buildings that are older and do need that maintenance, as well as natural resources that need to be maintained. So you've brought up some excellent points. I will share also in response that within the Department of Natural Resources, the majority of our Parks and Trails Legacy Fund does go towards the trying to maintain what we have. When we did do those 17 listening sessions and develop the 25-year plan that Chair mentioned, Chair Anderson mentioned, we heard from people that they wanted us to take care of what we have and then strategically consider those new opportunities. And so I think that's where we try to find that balancing act of using a lot of the legacy to help us accelerate what we can do to modernize or maintain that system, as well as identify those key areas that we're being responsive to new opportunities. But you raised some excellent points that I think we all need to grapple with. For example, crack sealing, that's a great point. We received $1 million in general fund to enhance our crack sealing because we learned that we save money in the long run if we do that. So we're trying to understand, can we invest in our system in ways that allows it to actually last a long time, meet the needs of Minnesotans, while strategically thinking about the new opportunities. Does anyone else have anything to add?
Proceed.
Thank you. I just want to make a point that you may not be aware of. So DNR, of course, owns the state parks and trails. That's our Minnesota resource. Our 80 facilities in greater Minnesota are not owned or managed by the commission. Those are obviously owned by cities, counties. Hopefully at some point we have tribal governments as well who have facilities. One of the things that we require in our master planning process, so you've ranked high, we've asked you now for a qualified master plan. In that plan, we look for what you plan, what would you like to do with that facility. So it can be a facility that's never been built, or it can be a facility that you're looking to put into our system and do some additions or some new projects there. But one of the key points that we ask our applicants to address is, how do you plan to maintain and operate this facility that you're looking for funding for, or this trail? Because obviously the needs are great, and we don't fund crack sealing and seal coating. That's a routine maintenance item you as the operator need to take care of. We can help you rehabilitate a 20-year-old trail that's reached its lifespan. So we really dig deep into the operation and maintenance when we're looking at a master plan for a facility that wants to enter our system. And in the funding application, it's clear that this is not for routine maintenance. We expect you to, if you're building a new facility, you had best think about what it's going to cost you to operate, because there is a cost associated with it. The nice new shiny thing is not going to be nice new and shiny forever. It's going to take some wear and tear. So we try to address that on the front end, knowing that the teeth would be in the future, you may not be have a grant, but we dig as deep as we can into these and often go back to our applicants, as Chair Anderson can confirm, to say we're not comfortable with what your plan is yet. So think about it for another year before you apply for funding again, because you're not really addressing how you plan to maintain this new aspect you want to build. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Heisman, a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am familiar with the project expectations in the maintenance plan that is submitted when folks are coming to ask for money. The issue is, while these may be the best laid plans, the devil's in the details, and you don't have to go too far to see examples of whether it's trails or other infrastructure, buildings, et cetera, that are in need of help. And so somewhere along the line, that plan isn't necessarily meeting expectations. And I'm not saying that anyone is necessarily to blame, except that we need to figure out a more sustainable method for maintaining these systems. And I think that's where the legislature needs to be more collaborative together, everyone on each side of the aisle, and figuring out how we're going to do this. Because going through and having this somewhat, I think arguably at times, a piecemeal process, as opposed to the money is set aside, it's there, it's ready as soon as the need is present. I think that would be a better stewardship of these resources, as opposed to some of the processes I think that have led to the examples that I hear from folks when they recognize, hey, we have a problem over here, over there. And the crack sealing example is the one, because we have many, many hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of miles of trails, I'm sure at this point, paved trail, that if you don't hit that benchmark immediately, you're going to wind up with increase costs because now we've missed the window or whatever the case might be. So that's what I'm trying to address, and I know that we have plans, but we need to make sure that we are following through and we have the resource, the dollars there to have that maintenance work done. That's all I'm saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. Just Representative Scrabble, you're going to be next, but I just want to follow up on Representative Heinzman's important message. Ms. Appleton-Matson, you said you, when you're dealing and talking with the cities and the counties with their project, you try to let them know or try to inform them. And like Yoda said, you do or you do not. There is no try. So I'm sure that you do more than trying to let them know that their responsibility financially is to maintain the their project and their trails and equipment or whatever they have. I would imagine that would be the case, correct?
Chair McDonald, that is the case. We clearly state, I shouldn't say try, you're right. We clearly state that the maintenance is going to be your responsibility going forward. And we do, as I said, dig into that maintenance and operations plan. And we all know numbers can be, you know, you can come up with some pretty rosy numbers. But I think I know we've gotten very good over the past years with the expertise of the 13 commissioners we have, Joe Chepesky, my colleague, and myself, knowing when it's not strong enough. This is going to cost you more than you're planning for because inflation, we know, is always going to be there, cost increase for everything. So we do the very best we can sniffing out budgets for facilities we don't own, but we're very familiar with after all these years of visiting them, yes.
Very good, thank you. And just, again, to reiterate, Representative Heinzman said, you know, if you build it, they will come. If you don't maintain it, they won't. So perhaps this committee or something in the future, we can look at a percentage. You know, I think your budget last year was around $146 million, the last biennium. This year going forward of $133 million, maybe more. Maybe we look at a percentage that goes into maintaining some of the districts that you build and have new projects necessarily don't have the money, right, unless they increase property taxes. So maybe the committee looks at a percentage. I don't know. It's just an idea that goes into maintaining, much like cities and counties do when they're budgeting for a new fire truck or a new city hall. They put monies away in years to come, and when it comes to fruition, they can afford that. I don't know. Maybe that's being done already. Maybe it's a good idea. Maybe it's not. But it certainly addresses a very important issue that Representative Heinzman brought up. And with that, Representative Scrabble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another question, but I'm going to follow on that. Ms. Matson, are you saying that when you fund these projects, if they don't have the maintenance built into the funding, you don't fund them? Or, you know, you're saying you don't have the funds. You guys are way over your skis on this. You got to be careful. Is that what you're trying to say?
Ms. Appleton-Matson.
Chair McDonald, Representative Scrabble, let me give you a for instance. So in Representative Heinzman's district is the Gull Lake Trail, which is a new trail built around Gull Lake. In your district, of course, we have Mesabi Trail. Mesabi's a little different in that it's the trail now is finally complete.
Almost.
Getting there. We funded the last 2 miles, but now it's a 30-year-old trail that needs some serious rehabilitation because it, in spite of their best efforts to do all of the maintenance, the routine maintenance, it's just 26 years old. We recently funded a rehabilitation for a pretty good section of that trail. It's in this year's funding recommendations, actually. That's a different matter than building the Gull Lake Trail, which is a brand new trail. We looked for them to tell us what their plan is to maintain that trail, knowing that there are four different partners in that trail, but it needs to be, as has been mentioned here, nobody cares which section of trail you're riding. It's a joint project with these communities. Looking at their maintenance plan for the years and what they were budgeting, that was a realistic budget for that. We feel confident that they are going to be able to maintain that trail in the way that they need to maintain it. There are facilities like campgrounds that can maintain much easier because they're charging a fee for those facilities. So that's a little bit different, but we don't not look at that. We want to know how they plan to maintain that campground that we've helped them build. So you can't ever be, there's always going to be changes that happen, but I feel confident that when we're looking at these plans and asking for realistic operations and maintenance budgets, that's what we're getting. And when we do send them back, it's because we felt a budget did not take into account the maintenance it's going to take for that facility over its lifetime. And we do fund rehabilitation projects, like the Mesabi Trail. We fund to rehab parts of that trail that are just, they've exceeded their lifespan. We fund major rehabilitation projects on facilities that have been well-loved, well-used, but have come to the point where they need rehabilitation, taking care of what we have. So we deploy those dollars as the applications come forward to us and approve them after thorough vetting to make sure that the money is being spent in an appropriate manner.
Representative Strava.
Thank you, Chair. Question for Ms. Prius on the State Parks and Trails System, the whatever screen that is, 11, 12, 13, 14. You guys have on here state and grant and aid trails, 25 state trails, 1,500 miles developed state trails, 27 designated, and 24,600 miles of grant and aid trails. I'm going to assume that that includes snowmobile and ATV trails.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Prius.
Representative Scrabble, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Representative Scrabble.
And I've had meetings with various folks here. I noticed a lot of projects that have been coming through are not mechanized, or there's fewer mechanized comparatively to, you know, motorized, because the bike is mechanized, you know, but like snowmobile trails, ATV trails, do they make it to the committee? Do you guys hear them and work on them? Because, I mean, when I look at the list of trails that get funded, they seem like they tend to be more hiking, biking, trails, and not so much a Prospector's Loop, the Taconite Trail, Tomahawk Trail, a lot of grant needs. And I know I was a trail administrator out of Ely between Lake Superior and the city of Ely. That was our trail that we maintained. So I kind of know how the system works, and I'm just wondering, we were never taught that Legacy is a place to come get funding. It was always use your trail, your permit money from your snowmobiles, to which we just found out today that there's no payments anymore this year for the snowmobile because there's not enough money in the account. So not to say that everyone's going to come scrambling to here, but I'm just curious why it seems like there's not any there and there's more of the other group.
Ms. Prius.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. And you've brought up a lot of great points about the interconnectedness of our system, both with grant and aid and with our regional system. So a few different ways that I will respond. The DNR State Parks and Trails legacy portion that we invest in typically is focused on our state trails, bridges. Many of those are a fundamental part of, for example, the snowmobile system. And so we feel that it benefits multi-use. So it might be the snowmobilers, the bikers, all those who are using that trail. So we try to fund those things that would benefit many different groups of Minnesotans. And so our investments do, I believe, benefit those communities as well as a variety of other communities too, and we really try to look at ensuring that we're meeting all of Minnesotans' needs with the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund as guided by the 25-year plan. In addition, as you've noted, grant and aid, that's a wonderful partnership effort, and I thank you for the work that you've done as trail administrator, because it really takes these thousands of volunteers around the state to make our system possible. That is funded through a grant and aid program with a dedicated accounts through the snowmobile account or the ATV account. And so we do fund it that way for specific clubs who are bringing those projects to us and want them funded. They have the grant and aid program. And if that system happens to be with a state system, we see a need, a bridge or a trail, we may be funding it. And then thirdly, I'll just share that some of those may be regional that could be eligible to apply via the regional system funding. So there is a collection of funding sources, and we really try to follow the 25-year legacy plan that wanted us to optimize and complement those funds.
Vice,
that helps.
Yeah, Vice Chair Scraba, I will add.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chair? Sorry that I.
Thank you. That's okay. I don't know if Ms. Matson has anything to add. If not, I'm good with everything. All right. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Next, we have Representative Lilly, and then on deck will be Representative Vang for some questions. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just kind of want to start off in supporting what Representative Heitzman's talking about, because I think ongoing maintenance is as soon as we build something, of course, it's instantly going to have to be fixed, and we see that in this space and capital investment. It's just, and it does impact use. I think way back when I was on the city council, we'd build a park and someone would come in and wreck something, it'd drive you absolutely crazy. And when you finally finish it to like a brand new bathroom and they, decide to tear a sink off the wall or something. So, and it affects the use. So you have to shut it down, and maybe a family with a, a child that needs to, or a senior that needs to get in and use the facility, it's not going to happen. And then, and then human nature, the next step, is whatever. It's a little easier with a kid on a tree, but anyways, far too much detail there. who knows what happens in Scraba's district?
We won't even so go there, Representative Lilly.
Thank you for bringing that issue up. So I just, I'm going to start with a little bit of, again, I've brought this up for years and it drives me absolutely crazy. And I'm going to give credit to Greater Minnesota. It's a great brochure, and thank you. And again, I challenge the Metro folks to do the same thing, and the DNR to really dig in and kind of explain and show where each project's going. Ultimately, the team that Mr. Anderson and others are putting together in that case, we understand, we may not understand each one of them, but they put thought into each one. And I imagine it's the same case with the DNR and the Metro. It's just hard to get that out of this. It's good. And the same with the DNR piece. So, and I'm not saying that there's necessarily bad work or, and I don't need to micromanage every project, but it is nice the way it's set up, and I think it's a great learning opportunity. So, members, I really encourage you to look at the Greater Minnesota piece and what's going on there. And then one of them I thought was, I hate to pick on Scraba, but the Frazee piece, I wonder if he was a model for that. So I just have a kind of a couple quick questions, and just if you could just kind of answer them quick. We kind of heard briefly on the trail or the track devices at Greater Minnesota. I'm just, if you could just quickly tell me what each, if the Metro has some of that going, and the same with the DNR. So just real quick, I have about four quick questions.
Ms. Prius. Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, thank you. Yes, we do have a track tier program. Several years ago, we piloted a program with that and started with about 8 chairs throughout the state. And similar to our executive director here described for the Greater Minnesota system, we've really gotten a positive response. And people appreciated the opportunity. It made a difference for them getting to place and being able to access and enjoy the outdoors. And so we are continuing to grow that program. We are having additional track chairs, and we have developed operational guidelines to help the staff care for them to ensure that they last long, they're well used, and that they work out well. So yes, it's a very popular program, and we are expanding it. Some of the expansions that we're doing is through the Get Out More funding. And so again, we look at these sources of funding and try to complement the work that's happening across them.
Representative Lilly, a follow-up?
I think I want to just briefly from
Ms. Barajas.
Okay,
is that correct, Ms. Barajas?
Mr. Chair, it's Barajas, but thank you.
That was close. The J is silent.
It's like an H. In the metro area, Representative Lilly, we do not use legacy funds for that work. We do know that some of our agencies are funding and have available track wheelchairs, but I'll have to follow up with more details with the committee for you all. Okay. I'm happy to do that.
Representative Lilly?
Thank you. Just a bunch of little quick questions, if I can, Mr.
Yes.
Chair. So then I noticed in the Greater Minnesota brochure there was like Youth and Trails in Duluth program. I'm guessing it's Greater, or it's that was a Duluth or Greater Minnesota. Is the Metro and the DNR working with youth to get, you know, kids in the program to beyond the ICANN program and the Outdoor More, or, you know?
Whomever would respond to that, please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, in the metro area, a lot of our implementing agency partners have programs where they're partnering with schools, where they have tri programs, kind of weekend and evening triad programs for youth, and a lot of other community-based partnerships. Some of those are funded through the legacy and sometimes are funded through other funding sources. Again, like my partners were saying, using that collection of different funding sources that we have available, but certainly a lot of different partnerships that our different agencies have depending on their geography and who's available to work with them, and community-based organizations to bring youth to the outdoors. Sometimes those are specific, like Outdoor Latino. Sometimes they're, you know, very specific to a cultural group as well. So lots of different partnerships that our agencies are trying out to really introduce folks, not just youth, but more broadly, introduce folks to the outdoors.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, similar with the state system, we have a variety of programs beyond ICANN. That's just one program as a skill building program. And so we are actively seeking to connect with youth and families and make it easy for them to get connected to the outdoors. As an example, we have about 50,000 participants in the ICANN program. Our naturalist programs, though, have like 8,000 programs with 245,000 participants. And we delivered 2,100 requested programs for 60,000 participants from schools, organizations, and clubs. So it is a broad reach throughout our system in connecting with those groups. An important part of our work that is really, really enhanced with Legacy. Legacy is a game changer for us on this. And I will also add that we are working on putting together some of this information in a document. We'd be happy to follow up and share some of that with you. It's really important and to be able to share and have you all see what's going on. And then appreciate your acknowledging to the Outdoors for Everyone, which is really a joint product across all three systems to try to tell a little bit the story of Legacy. Thank you.
Anyone else on the panel? Representative Lilly has a couple more.
Thank you. Just quick, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So then, like it was mentioned, in the last couple of years, we tried to really push free access and more accessibility. So it sounds like there's some successes. So our DNR passes available in libraries and other. I mean, so I think it's important for members to know where, you know, they can shoot their, you know, encourage our constituents, and, you know, to get out and. But free access, are they increasing it? And then in the metro, there's a little bit of a trouble because some of the counties, you know, have county access fees, and it just, and is there ways that the county are kind of helping and making it affordable too? Because sometimes you can get, if you're you're a skier, you've got to buy a ski pass, you've got to buy, compounding. So you have a county fee. And then before you know it, I mean, and I'm certain that a family that's starting is just no way that they can actually really get out and use the thing. So I just want to, I guess that wasn't a quick question.
Ms. Prius, do you have a response to that or an answer? Or Ms. Barajas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, you're right that there, and I know the skiing part myself as a skier with children who like to ski all over the metro, it can add up quickly. We do have some of our implementing agencies that do offer free access and certainly free access days as well. I know our Three Rivers Park District has their Nordic Ski Opener Day as an example. It's a free day for anyone to get out, try on skis, get a free lesson. But there also are, as we had shared in the report that we filed earlier this year around program rentals or equipment rental, that we have a number of our different agencies are offering that equipment rental for free or no cost to a variety of different groups over the course of the year. But yes, that ski rental thing and making, or that ski pass, you know, snowmaking is important, unfortunately, is important as our winters become warmer and our snow less reliable. So being able to pay for snowmaking is part of what, and grooming trails is what part of that pass pays for. Natural ski trail passes tend to be a lot less expensive, but coordinating that across the metro certainly is important to me as a skier and to, I know, a lot of families around the region. But yes, opening up and considering other ways of making those access to the outdoors and reducing those barriers a lot easier are certainly topics of conversation across the metro district so that we can coordinate that. So folks aren't wondering like, wait, now what do I have to do here? Do I need a different pass? How is this different? And not knowing where those boundaries lie sometimes is certainly a barrier.
Appreciate Very good.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ms. Prius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly and members, yes, thank you. To build on that, the State Parks and Trails System also has four free days throughout the year. And my colleague has just pointed out that on our website, we have all of the libraries listed. So there's easy ways to go. When can they get into the park for free? Where are those libraries where they can check out the access pass? And I do believe that these are some new programs like this library pass that in conversation with this committee in past years, as well as what we're hearing from the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, we're trying to adapt and pay attention to accessibility, access, cost, and these kinds of things. So we are trying some things out. I will also mention that the Department of Natural Resources more broadly is going through a For the Outdoors effort to try to understand funding needs, how we keep the system over time, as well as keep those costs available for people. So thank you. And thanks to Lars Erdahl. Lars is the works closely with the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, working with all three partners. So thanks to Lars Erdahl, who helps lead that group. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Prius. Yes, Erdahl, that name's familiar in this committee.
Yes, it is.
Representative Lilly, thank you for your good points, and you have another.
If it's okay, one.
It's always one okay. Absolutely.
I don't know if
you don't have
always,
to ask if it's okay. If it's not okay, I'll let you know.
Okay, fair enough. That's what I was hoping. So the final one is kind of about the ICANN program, and then all the systems, you know, that are kind of doing similar things. Are you looking back at this? Because it seems like we've been doing these for a while now. ICANN is amazing and the Get Outdoor program. But are you looking at the data to see that someone maybe come out and do fishing for the first time, or they may do kayaking, that we're succeeding and, you know, or skiing, and that we're getting people, you know, that it's clicking, you know, or it's working, or you're modifying what you're doing to make sure that we're, you know, we're bringing new people to these activities in the outdoors. So not only, you know, I think you're doing a great job, or better job rather, of and great job of getting more people out that haven't traditionally used these resources, but I think are you looking at the data, you know, like calling up somebody maybe and say, hey, will you give us like a survey? Did you buy a kayak? Did you buy a pair of skis? Did you, you know, is your family now, you know, skating or swimming in the lakes or fishing? Anyways, I guess that's kind of my, I just want to know that if we're successful in getting new people doing things. Anyways.
And a very important question, Representative Lilly. I think probably all of us had that kind of thought as we looked through the budget. Whomever would like to respond to that, continue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, thank you for the question. And yes, that's extremely important. We have 25 years of legacy, so we want to learn about what we're doing and should we keep doing it, should we adapt. So we do evaluation programs with the ICANN program where we try to, you know, once people have completed it, You know, what are they thinking about it? What could improve? How is it affecting their participation? So we look at that. We also have a series of five-year rotations that we do. This is separate from Legacy. It's just sort of more broadly for our system about parks and trails visitors, as well as trails visitors, forest recreation visitors, water recreation visitors, and some motorized groups to understand the visitors and what they're asking for and what they're needing. I will note one challenge that we face in research is data privacy. And so it's not as though we can just say, oh, right, Here's these registrants and let's grab that person and call them. And so we are trying to balance that privacy needs with our research questions and needs, and would be happy to talk further with any of you about those things. We really take that research as an important fundamental part of understanding our visitors and are we meeting their needs and adapting over time. It's probably similar for our systems.
I would add, thank Mr. Chair.
Very good, yes.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Similarly, we do a broader, I know Representative Lilly is familiar with our regional parks visitor study that we do, a really in-depth intercept survey of all the visitors across, not all, we wish all, as many visitors as we can across the regional parks and trails system. But to your point around whether a program is bringing, you know, introducing a user and then having them become a more regular user, I think requires a much more in-depth type of targeted research that we're not quite doing today, but definitely is something of interest, I know, to our agency partners as well, about how we can both support that type of research, do it in a way that respects the confidentiality of the information that we have, but also helps us evaluate the effectiveness of these programs.
Thank you, Ms. Barzis. Yeah, I would agree with Representative Lilly. The Greater Minnesota Policy Report is beautifully photographed. I can appreciate that as a photographer. And the paper, lovely presentation. Of course, it costs a little bit more money than the Metro one, but a very informative. This is my second copy. The other one's at the office, and I keep this at the studio. And I would agree, Representative Lilly, this does look like Vice Chair Scraba. For the record, camera, can you zoom up a little closer and then go to his face? Beautiful, beautifully done. And with that, lead Vang.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair. I just have one question, and I just would like each of the testifiers to help answer this question. Seeing how all of you are able to get like a bird's eye view of the state's and condition of our parks and trails, I'm curious to see where do you guys see like the greatest demand or the greatest need in which the funding that you guys have been allocated has not been able to met, or if the funding that you have received has been able to adequately meet these needs. I would like to know that too as well, but I'm curious to see what do you guys see that are the greatest needs or demands from the community or from the condition in the state of our parks.
Thank you, Lead Vang. Excellent question. Whomever would like to answer that, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you for the question, Representative Vang. You know, the needs are many. Legacy, as has been said, it's a game changer. I mean, what an amazing thing that Minnesotans chose to do to tax themselves at a time when it wasn't all that popular to create this fund of dollars that has made tremendous strides forward. I can tell you that the vast majority of our 80 systems across our 80 facilities across the state and the many that have applied for funding could not have done that on their own. They couldn't have. It's just it was just beyond their means. So there's always more to do. You know, Greater Minnesota gets 20% of those funds. I think the areas of the greatest need in communities are ways to get people out and enjoying those facilities that we do have and those trails. And it's hard because you can't make someone do something they're not of a mind to do. So those ICANN programs are amazing. And, you know, you think about this as one big system. Those ICANN programs teach people skills that then they can translate to Metro Parks and Trails, Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. They're training new users to go more broadly and become better and more frequent users across all of our systems, across all of our facilities. So it's that importance of training in the beginning to get people comfortable with it that I think has a huge impact. Facilities are wonderful, but if no one's using them, it's pointless. So the more that we can do to really figure out ways to bring people into our systems, I think is going to have the biggest impact. A few years ago, we tried an initiative where we set aside coordinating among partner, or excuse me, connecting people to the outdoors funds, and we said to our applicants that year in our funding process, you can come to us with any idea you have. Think of something that you've always wanted to try. You didn't have the dollars in your own department to try. Apply for this grant, and we're going to give you the funds to try something you've never tried before in the hopes that we're going to come up with one great idea out of these. We had a lot of equipment grant requests that year, so we didn't have anything that was like over the edge, weird, wonderful, but we tried and we continue to try. But those equipment grants made huge differences, and as was referenced, the grant that the city of Duluth got for a mobile mountain bike fleet made a giant difference. The Parks and Trails, the Park Department in Duluth thought that they were going to be teaching kids how to ride mountain bikes. Well, they were teaching kids how to ride bikes, because they were taking these mobile bikes in a trailer out to neighborhoods that didn't have access to this. They were very, very underserved communities. And what they discovered was they were teaching kids a life skill that their parents weren't able to teach them because they couldn't afford a bike. So did that make a huge difference? It did. So that was an equipment grant that we were happy to fund that came with wonderful stories and great photographs of kids learning this sport, but not learning necessarily to mountain bike right away, just how to ride a bike. So those are the sorts of things I think we can do more of.
Lead Vang. Oh, yes. Continue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vang, members, thank you for that question, and I'm seeing, noticing a connection with some of Representative Heisman's earlier comments about taking care of our system. I think one thing you'll hear from all of us is we really see legacy as a game changer for each of our systems. It has had dramatic, significant impacts over the life of legacy. Very important, whether it's trying to rehabilitate important features, do natural resource management activities, or have programs that actively connect the next generation to the outdoors. So huge, really huge impacts for us, especially in our system in connecting people to the outdoors. I will also note, you were saying, how do we see it overall? Much of our system, as an example, is 60 to 90 years old. You know, it was built in these waves. And so, you know, now you're coming up on 100 years. Yes, there's things that need rehabilitation. We do not use legacy in our system for that regular operations and maintenance work because we're keenly aware of not supplanting. But we do use legacy to accelerate our ability to rehabilitate and take care of our system and modernize it in effective ways. And we have a capital backlog report that is also important, I think, for bonding. It's a significant backlog. So I don't know that we can say that legacy is meeting all of that need, but it is accelerating our ability to try to make a dent in that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Representative Van, committee members, I totally agree with everything that my partners have said today as well on the importance of legacy, but also recognize the importance of the one portion of the part that I mentioned earlier in my presentation that's a set aside in particular for the metro area as a part of our legacy under the law is for acquisition purposes. And that acquisition focus in this, especially recently, has been around growing the regional trail system. It has been in big demand in the metro area to grow that system as the population has continued to grow, as more and more folks are getting out and traveling and recreating on bikes or walking on those trails and wanting to be able to do more of that across the entire metro area. It's 10% of our funds, of our legacy funds, and on a regular basis, and it's made a huge difference in our ability for our agencies to be planning for those acquisitions, because we do that on a willing seller basis, not on a condemnation. We're going to get it all done in 1 year type of thing, but on a willing seller basis, so they can know that this is what's coming next year, this is what's available, and be planning ahead for that. That has been a huge game changer as far as being able to plan for that acquisition for the trail system and to continue to build out the remainder of the parks system and the park reserves. But it certainly isn't enough, especially with the increase in cost that come with acquiring land and then building those trails. And then as Representative Heisman made a very good point about, we don't use legacy for maintenance. Maintenance comes elsewhere, and maintaining that system is a big part of how we keep users continuing to come back to the system. So that's where we would see that more of that unmet demand that legacy doesn't meet and isn't intended to meet is on that maintenance side.
Very good. Lead Vang?
That'll be all. Thank you so much.
All right. Then we have Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair. I don't really have a question. I just want to share some insight. And, you know, again, thank you for the brochure. It's nice to have color brochures in committee, you know. But, you know, I just want to kind of touch on the importance of parks and recreation for new Americans, right? So as a new American refugee to this country, how we utilize these parks and trail is very unique in that it's probably utilized as a place where we host our New Year's prior to having it at the, downtown center. We used to host New Year's at the Parks and Recs. And annually in our community, we have family reunions every year, and we utilize the Parks and Recs for that utility. And so that's a significant role that the parks play in our culture and community. But also as a new American, I mean, you know, there was a time when there wasn't cell phones and, you know, internet, right? And, you know, we grew up utilizing these parks and fishing. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, parents and, you know, these new generation kids understand the importance of these parks and recs and how it develops character and also stewardship in terms of conservation environment, right? So I just want to, you know, add that to this conversation. But I also want this committee to think about that the legacy amendment will be sunsetting in 2034. And it sounds like it's far away, but it's not. It's probably four sessions away. And I want this committee to think about that and the stakeholders and Minnesotans to put that in their mind that how important the legacy fund amendment is to our state and to, you know, the people of Minnesota. And so, you know, I just wanted to put that out there, Chair, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. Very good points as well. Any response from our esteemed three? Representative Barajas.
Thank you, Mr.
Did I say that right?
Closer.
Close enough for government work, huh?
Yes, exactly.
I'll keep trying.
I was just...
Thanks a lot. Lily.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cha, I totally agree. As a child of new immigrants to this country, the outdoors where our family always got together are too big to fit in any building. But the and a building that we could afford, at least. When we most recently did our visitor study, it certainly was something that we were finding from visitors about what was important to them, why they were coming to the parks. And they, a lot of visitors were sharing with us exactly that. This is where our family gathers. It's a large space. It has lots of activities for the kids to go run around and do something, not break something inside of a house, but also for all of the family to gather. In addition, one thing that we find from youth, too, is that they like to come and just do nothing, which was also really interesting, just hanging out, hammocking, probably scrolling their phones, but they were doing it outside, and that was an important part of that. But I just wanted to emphasize how much we saw that in our visitor study more recently, and something that we're gearing up to update in this coming year as well, is really digging into what brings people to the parks, what's important to them, and dissecting that for, you know, down to different demographics about who finds that importance, because it really helps our agencies think about how they're programming, but also how they're advertising or marketing these spaces for folks who maybe aren't visiting our parks already.
Thank you, Lisa Beth. Ms. Barras. Yes, Ms. Prius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cha, and members, thank you so much. I will add similarly, Thank you for sharing that story, and also just thinking about how we're trying to hear about the importance of the different ways that people want to use our system into the future. And so we are using a lot of our legacy funds to consider when we upgrade or modernize that we're doing it in a way that might take into account group gatherings or different ways that people enjoy being together in the outdoors, rather than the sort of old-fashioned way that was maybe done, you know, 60 years ago or something. That met many needs, and some of those needs still exist, but how do we hear what we're learning from people and adjust our system? We also, this next coming up, are doing work on some of our group centers, also with that idea in mind of how people like to gather in groups in different ways than the past. So we're doing some upgrades with Legacy to address that. And then my final third thing I wanted to note is thank you so much for bringing up the fishing and how important that is for people and families. And I just wanted to note that in state parks, if you are within a water body within a state park, you can bring your family fishing and do that for free. Again, it's this idea of how do we introduce people to these low-cost experiences so somebody can try it out and see if they like it? There's more information about that on our website, just as a way to try to open the doors for fishing and parks and the whole things that DNR has to offer. Thank you.
Good. Representative Chaw, anything to follow up?
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, some of my fond memories in America is actually Parks and Recs, you know, where my parents took us fishing. And, you know, as an athlete, you know, we utilize these parks like every day. That's where we go, right? Besides the library. I mean, libraries are great too. But after school, the first thing we do is go to the park. We play basketball, we play tennis, or we play soccer and volleyball. And that's what we did with our time. And so we did that for many years. We were a generation where we were always outdoors. So I just wanted to express the importance of parks and trails and what it means to the youth and, you know, generations of immigrants in Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
And before we go to Representative Scrabble for a question, there's always Pokemon Go, right, for the kids to get outside? Did your kids ever do that? They finally got off. Well, they got outside. They still were on their phones, but Pokemon Go. Okay, I'm showing my age, young. Representatives, excuse me.
Vice Chair
Scraba.
Thank you, Chair McDonald. There were two things I forgot to bring up. You know, unfortunately, nothing for the Metro. So I'm safe on the name. One of the things that we had an ATV ride earlier this year, last year, I should say, and we thought we had a pretty good plan, a pretty good idea, everything. You know, you ride from here to there, you get out, there's a vault toilet, and we rode some more that day, and we got done with the ride, and we asked everyone, how was it? And it happened more than once. The women always say, there are not enough vault toilets along the way because men don't notice it because when there's plenty of trees, right? It is a fact of the woods. That's what happens. So when we put three more vault toilets, I'm like, well, geez, these are expensive. But again, if you want your user group to be diverse, you adapt and you overcome. So that's one of the things we're learning as we're going through trail development and development. It's almost like you can't have enough of them. And the other one is for Ms. Mattson. And you don't have to tell me the exact spot, but I'm kind of curious where that little kid caught that walleye in Roseau River. Do you see the size of that fish compared to the kid?
Photoshopped.
Huh? I mean, Representative Cha, you're like, you got to be like, let's go. I mean, I saw that. I'm like, wow. So anyway, I'm sure you don't know. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Scraba, thanks for bringing up the vault toilet again. Would any of you three want to respond, or do you have an answer? Yeah, we're good.
Mr.
Yes.
Chair, Representative Scraba, I'll just remember that fact of the woods, and we do use Legacy to try to continue to bit by bit add some more. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions from the committee? It's 10 to 12. We have a session at 12. I'd like to thank, and I'm going to use first names as well. First names are kind of important. Renee Apple-Matson, Laura Prius, and Lisabeth Barajas. Thank you. And Chair and Commissioner Anderson, thank you for your input as well, for the very insightful and informative Parks and Trails presentation. If there's no other business before this body, we are adjourned. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.